Good morning. This is Therapy Rabbits, the inaugural first of all time, very first podcast about Therapy Rabbits, which is going to be delivered by Felicia King, which is me, of Aristocrats of Wisconsin Rabbitry. And then my special guest today is Brooke Lee, Vice President of Eureka Process. And Brooke has been a recent connoisseur of Therapy Rabbits. Like, how many months now have you been a connoisseur of Therapy Rabbits?
Probably just a couple at this point, but you're extremely convincing. So that's how we ended up down this path.
So I think we have to, on our inaugural here podcast for Therapy Rabbits, first define our terms. So what is a therapy rabbit from the perspective of a new rabbit connoisseur?
A therapy rabbit, in my opinion, is a rabbit that was specifically bred for temperament and human interaction compared to rabbits that may be bred for reproduction, farm pets, things like that. So it is a rabbit that was specifically bred with characteristics in mind to be around humans on a daily basis inside, as well as for the temperament that we need to have any type of a therapy animal. They need a specific type of temperament.
And what have you learned about housing for therapy rabbits?
Before I met you and your rabbitry, I knew absolutely nothing about any type of housing for rabbits, only the stuff that you see, you know, on the internet, TV, whatever. And I think rabbits in general get a bad rap that somehow if you have them in some sort of an enclosure of any kind, that is bad for the rabbit, that somehow that is you're being mean to the rabbit. It's not a good life for them or whatever. That is something that I thought when I first met you and the rabbits, and that is something that changed very quickly, in my opinion, on the living environment. So your rabbits have very specific living environments that were custom designed and engineered by you for a rabbit to have a happy habitat to live in and be able to live inside so that they can be around humans. Again, that's the point of your breeding program.
So on this housing topic, this is interesting because I do agree with you that there is a ton of misinformation out there on the internet surrounding rabbits. And I find that particularly frustrating because I feel like it not only sets up people for being bad rabbit owners, but because they don't actually understand what rabbits want or need. So then they can't be that rabbit therapy partner. They can't speak the rabbit language. They don't understand the rabbit psychology. And so I feel like when they hear this information that says, oh, the rabbit's got to be out and about running loose and wild in your house all the time, well, then the inevitable consequences of that is the rabbit chews on something and it poops and pees someplace you didn't want it to. Even if it's a litter box trained rabbit, it's going to drop poo balls. This is what they do. They drop in the bombs as they're running about. And then the chewing thing, I mean, most people don't realize that rabbits explore their environment with their teeth. It's just what they do.
Not realize how rapidly they grow, and that if you don't provide something for them to chew on constantly, that they will find something to chew on.
Right.
So if you have to provide it, that is also something I did not realize before, like I said, becoming friends with you and learning all of this stuff about the rabbit. And like I said, I had no idea at the pace at which their teeth grow.
Yeah, 2 millimeters per week on the incisors, typically a little bit less on the cheek teeth. And something interesting on teeth that most people don't realize is that rabbits actually do an exceptionally good job of maintaining their own teeth. So there are times when you'll see the rabbit just making really rapid little jaw movements. And what they're doing is they're making their mandible go back and forth, and it's a maxillary grinding action against the maxillary cheek teeth. And it is it's wearing them down and it resets them. And so that when a rabbit eats, it goes in kind of an oval shape chewing pattern. It's not up down. It's an oval shape because they're grinding and masticating. Their tongue is also very large and it fills most of their mouth cavity. And the top of their, the roof of their mouth has got all these ridges on it, which is used for also grinding. They've got a very hard palate. So I don't know how that contrasts with other herbivores, because I'm not an expert on other herbivores, but this whole thing about, I feel like when there's this misinformation associated with rabbits need to be loose, you know, loosey goosey all over the place, they're just going to get into trouble. It's pretty much inevitable. And so then the humans get frustrated. They're like, oh, I hate rabbits. I don't want rabbits. Rabbits destroy things. Okay. Well, you know, I don't think it's practical for most people to set up an entire area of their basement where they have sheets down that the rabbits can destroy and, you know, poop and pee on all over. And just like, here's this whole section of my basement, rabbits run wild. You know, that is not practical for the majority of people. And from a cleanliness perspective, I find it preposterous as well. So yeah, this misinformation on the internet has always frustrated me. I think one of the other things that irritates me is you'll see these people saying that you should go buy some $8 salad and feed it to your rabbit. Well, that's also preposterous. You know, if we set this expectation that you got to be buying $8 salads for rabbits all the time, well, then, you know, you don't want the rabbit because the rabbit is now an expensive pet. And in reality, salad itself is not a balanced meal for rabbits. If rabbits are out in the wild, they're intricate explorers. They explore everything. They map out in their mind where all of the food sources are. And they know, oh, the dandelion is over here and the broadleaf grass is over here and here's some clover. And they map this out. They also know where your garden is at. And, and they create their own balanced diet. And it was recently one of my rabbits that I sold to a family. They had expressed to me how they had had rabbits for about 28 years and that all of their previous rabbits had developed stomach issues that they had to go take them to the vet. And I said, well, why don't you send me some pictures of the housing? And then what food have you been feeding your rabbits? So they showed me the pictures of the housing, and it was this wood housing that was painted wood. So number one, the rabbit is eating the paint. Two, they're ingesting this wood, which is not good for them. And then the food that they were feeding the rabbits was a brand that I have known through personal scientific testing leads to dead kits. So I did this experiment once. I was working through exactly what food I was going to utilize in the rabbitry. And so I got these different brands. And I would do a very scientific testing where I'd say, okay, well, I'm going to have this 50-pound bag of this. And I feed it to these three does. And then I have those three does mated by three different bucks. And then they all have kits at the same time. And they would all have dead kits. Okay, so that's like garbage food right there.
Done
then
that.
You change the food. And again, same three does, same three bucks. As previous, and now they all have really good litters of 4, 5, 6 kits, all healthy, no dead kits. So clearly it's a food thing. And I've tried various food experiments over the years, and I cannot tell you enough how intensely important the food is to healthy rabbits. The even giving does, pregnant does, a certain food that's really more appropriate only for growing kits, that will also lead to dead babies. So that food routine that a pregnant doe has, boy, that's really important that's exactly right. So so I suggested to this family that they change food, because I have rabbits that have never had stomach issues. They've never had to go to the vet, and I do not house them in wood. They don't have the opportunity to chew on cabling, and they don't chew on wood. And
the wood house, when you Google rabbit you know, enclosures, interior for a house or whatever, those fancy looking houses come up. They look cute. They look like a glorified Barbie type house or something. I mean, don't get me wrong. They're very pretty. They look like a little colonial whatever with some windows and some shutters and whatever, but the rabbit's eating the wood. So at the end of the day, I mean, you need to get an enclosure again, which is why I decided to purchase one of yours that was engineered specifically. It's literally, it's not for me to look at. It is not for me to say, oh my gosh, that's such a pretty kit. No, it is specifically built for the happiness of the rabbit. Because if the rabbit is happy, then, you know, he will be a much better companion for me.
And healthy.
That's what this is about. It's a relationship. This is what I think is the difference between any sort of a therapy animal and your therapy rabbits and the person that is going to purchase them is you are, this is a relationship between a rabbit and a person. This is not you buying a pet that is going to sit in this whatever, you know, fancy dancy little wooden whatever that you bought off the internet and it looks cute and you can post it on Instagram. That's not what this is. This is a relationship between a rabbit and a person in which they are going to try to live in harmony together and enjoy each other's company. And in order to do that, this rabbit has got to have a space to live in where he is happy. The space is his. It's not mine. It has to be for him, which is why, like I said, to me, the engineering and the thought process behind how you, you know, you had version one, version two versus, I mean, you're an engineer. It's what y'all do. You know, oh, version one. Yep. That was great. Nope. Nope. I don't like that one anymore. That stinks. Let's move on to the next. And, you know, version after version after version until you got to something where the rabbits are happy to live there. I think one of the biggest cases in point for that one is with Maxim. He was born in one of these cages that you had engineered. And then when you moved him out of that into something else, and then he got his own cage that was identical to the one that you had engineered and he was born in, he knew exactly what to do. He knew, this is my space. He was a happy little rabbit, knew where to go to the bathroom. It was familiar to him and he was happy out of the gate. So again,
He was even looking for the components that weren't yet
installed. Yes, he was like, oh my gosh, where is my shelf, lady? The shelf is not here. Where is my tunnel? I don't understand. I mean, I can make do, but where is my stuff? But again, I think that is a mindset that you need to have if you're going to purchase one of these rabbits from you, is that the space is for the rabbit to be happy. Because if the rabbit is happy, then your relationship with that rabbit is going to work.
So I want to go back to some of the housing things, because I had a couple who had some children and they wanted to get a couple does from me that were sisters for their children. And they had previously purchased some housing off of Amazon, and it was that, you know, cutesy
the Barbie looking
stuff.
House.
Yeah. It was the Barbie house, rabbit house. And
yes, it is.
And they were going to put it in the backyard. And I said to the father, I said, first off, your rabbits are going to be dead in the first night. And he says, what do you mean? I said, well, do you think that a raccoon can't get in there?
Or something else.
Because a raccoon thinks that rabbit is tasty food. And so a raccoon has, you know, tricky fingers, and it has no problem getting those latches open. Now I know this Absolutely. Stuff because I know about chickens, and if, you know, you've got to have like Fort Knox for your chickens, or your chickens get eaten by, you know, raccoons and mink and, you know, all kinds of things that are predators. So I told him, you know, here's the other thing. What's going to happen in Wisconsin when it's over 85 degrees outside? I said, you're going to have dead rabbits. So do you actually think like that, you know, Amazon purchased condo thing for your rabbit is a good idea? And I said, wait, no, it gets even better than that. So on the inside of this thing, it had this removable plastic tray, but there was nothing that the rabbits could walk on over the plastic tray. And then the plastic tray just sat on a wooden shelf. So I said, wait a second here. I'm giving you pristinely clean rabbits that are healthy. They don't run around in their urine. They don't run around in their feces. They're not ingesting nasty bacteria as a result of that. They want to be clean. In the wild, they do not lay in their feces and pee. They don't do that. So what do you think is going to happen if you tell the rabbits that, you know, this is your space and, okay, so maybe I put some shredded paper on it, but then they poop and pee there, you know, it's just going to be all up in them. And then I said to him, wait, you got this cage, this like, you know, condo thing on your grass and it's just there. There's no floor. So I said, you do know that rabbits can dig, right? They're going to be gone.
If they're not dead, they've left and hightailed it back to the aristocrat rabbitry because they're like, this is not where we're supposed to be. You're going to have two does sitting at your front door like, hey, Felicia, can we come back?
So here's what I told him. I says, you know, if you want to keep that little thing in the backyard as kind of a, you know, an outdoor play space that you take them to, that's no problem. But you cannot use that as their primary housing. Their primary housing should be inside, you know, in your office, in your daughter's bedroom, in the basement, wherever. But the cold isn't really an issue for them other than their water freezing. So they're very, very cold resilient. And if it starts getting up over 85, it's not good. It's not good for them. I mean, they've got this really, really dense fur. And so they're just going to overheat. Okay, well, and then I want to push the accelerator down a little bit more on the housing thing, because you're right that I've gone through at least 50 revisions of my cage designs. And I found that no one on the internet is manufacturing a cage design that works not only for the rabbits, but also for the owner. I feel that it's imperative that if you're going to be satisfied with your rabbit experience, it has to be a clean experience. It can't be burdensome. You can't have mess. And what most people don't realize is that rabbits pee on a 45 degree angle. They have to maintain a certain haunch position while they are standing, and then they kind of extend their tail a bit and they shoot out. And that's because they want to be very, very clean. You know, they do not want
to
pee down
on themselves. No.
Right. They don't want to pee down their legs. They got to shoot it out. So one of the things that works really well is if you do litter box train them and then it has some high sides, then they can just back themselves right up into there and it stays there. But there's also imperativeness with regards to a travel cage and really just, you know, your overall regular cage design that they... all that, you know, for you, for an owner's perspective, the probability of a 45 degree directional pee that leaves the cage is reduced as far as possible. And so this has been a major cage design consideration. And I was also deeply seeking to find a habitat that would be enriching and would work from an exercise perspective. So, you know, you brought up the point about the teeth wear. So how do we deal with the teeth wear? And also they're enriched because, you know, they want to chew, right? So what do we do?
So the two things that we do is you recommend the sisal rope, which is just a natural rope that they chew on. And you can see it on any of the cages that you have any of your rabbits in. That is a fixture. It is there all the time. The other thing that I think is pretty funny that I did not realize is cardboard. I had no idea how much fun they like to have with cardboard. part of it is, yes, the rabbit needs things to chew on, but the rabbits are incredibly intelligent and they have to entertain themselves and they want to be busy and they have to work their minds and, you know, tossing the box around, chewing on the rope, they need to be busy. They're just not going to sit there in the corner for 12 hours and not do anything. So the cardboard, which is, I mean, as you told me, everybody has it laying around the house. One of your favorite things are the small tea boxes for tea that people drink. And we have one rabbit, Arno, who is a tea box entertainment master. The videos that you have of him are wildly entertaining. But they also use like the paper towel rolls that they can chew up and different things like that. So there's people think that pets are really expensive, but there's so many things that these rabbits use that are not. I mean, these are just things that you have around your house. The leftover paper towel. Who would have thought that this would A, keep them entertained, and B, help keep their little teeth chewed down. So I think, and that sisal rope is dirt cheap. I mean, you can buy like 50 feet of that for like next to nothing. And who knows how long that lasts a rabbit. So the cardboard is in there. And to me, that's my favorite one because they have such fun with it.
Yep. My rule of thumb is as long as the cardboard is clean enough and you've removed, you know, plastic tape and it doesn't have any staples in it, then that's fine. We do always need to be concerned about what's called hardware disease. And this is true, I think, for any animals, that if they are vigorously eating something and there is a chunk of metal in it, then they very well may ingest that. Absolutely. And there's no, you know, there's no way for that to dissolve. So people ask me, well, what do you mean clean cardboard? Well, I say here's the thing. If you ordered something and it came from your local Amazon warehouse, then it really hasn't gone that far. On the other hand, if you order something and, you know, it went on intermodal transport, meaning it was on the rail cars and then it was on some trucks and it probably came from China, you know, I mean, that box has been everywhere. You don't know what is on that box. So just open up that box, you recycle that thing, you take the box that's inside of the thing that the box was the transport. Inside
is what I would recommend because that has the least amount of contamination or anything on it.
Exactly. So that is primarily what I use are the boxes that are inside the boxes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, generally I've been doing this for years and I have never had a rabbit get sick from a cardboard like that. Now on this cost effective thing, I think, you know, you make an excellent point, which is people are concerned about like, oh my gosh, it's an expensive pet. Well, first off, I can say a bag of pelleted feed, quality pelleted feed, is going to cost you probably less than $40 a year. And if you want to get like a hay substitute, that's probably also another $40 a year. Sunflower seeds couldn't possibly cost you any more than $40 a year. So there's that. And then, well, what do we do? What do we put in the litter boxes? Well, what I do is I just take all the paper that I get and I shred it. And I have friends who bring me newspaper and I shred that. And then as it gets pee absorbed, it goes into a compost bin and it's all recycled and it actually never leaves the property. And I use that on the garden for fertilizer. And holy kittens, does that stuff grow garden vegetables like wild. So there are some products that you can buy that are like, you know, litter box pee absorber, but I'm like, my goodness, why do you need to do that? Just buy a shredder. So, there's a lot of
the stuff. I mean, the rabbit food, the pelleted food that you recommended, I found that fairly easily. I bought it off of Amazon with the brand that you recommended for that. And it was not terribly expensive. It was a large bag. But some of the other stuff, I mean, definitely, if people are going to get a rabbit from you and they're not local there, I mean, source the people that are around you. I mean, you know, local feed shops, the place where I get the sunflower seeds, they sell a lot of bird stuff there. Use the things that are local to you. And I mean, just ask. I mean, I asked for a special type of sunflower seed and they're ordering it for me. But a lot of the stuff you can buy locally and, you know, if you can buy locally, a lot of times that will save on shipping and everything else. So there's a lot of stuff that, I mean, the sisal rope, you can get that from any hardware store. I mean, that's not like a special order thing. You know, ditto for the paper. I mean, you know, you can use your stuff that comes from, you know, the snail mail that we still get. You know, we get those flyers and stuff all the time. The newspapers, I mean, that's, you know, it's free. And I've seen the squash that have been grown with that fertilizer. And I mean, acorn squash the size of pumpkins. I mean, they're massive. There's the rabbit fertilizer stuff is good stuff for the garden.
So I've also read many people are frustrated by, they're like, oh, you know, you can only feed your rabbits like in this way because they can't get fat, right? You know, you don't want to have obese rabbits. And I'm thinking to myself, well, why would a rabbit get obese? Like, so I've had, I don't know, probably upwards of 60 or 70 rabbits at this point in time. And I've never had a rabbit obesity problem. And granted, they have free choice food. They have their pelleted feed. They have seeds. I don't give them seeds every day. And they get a carrot maybe once a week or so, you know, because carrots have a lot of sugar in them. But mostly it's the exercise. So if a lot of things you'll read, they'll say, well, only give the rabbits food once a day, or maximum twice a day, like one in the morning and one in the evening, and only just as much food as they'll clean up in 15 minutes. And the intent, they say, behind that is to make sure that they don't get obese. Now, I haven't had a problem with that whatsoever. And I think the reason for that is because, number one, I am breeding for naturally more active, more self-entertaining, direct drive, you know, inquisitive sort of exercising. They're naturally exercising sort of rabbits. But they also have cage systems that facilitate them to have that exercise, shelf, tunnel, up and down, rip around. You know, I build the base of the cage so that they can do their normal morning routine, which is like, oh, Felicia showed up. Let's rip around the bottom of the cage. Whoa, yeah. And they do. They love to do that high velocity rip around, but they also need to periscope. Right? All the way up periscope. Yep. So that cage has got to be tall enough for them to periscope. So I feel like that's just another example of the misinformation on the internet. And I do wonder if maybe they're misinterpreting rabbit obesity for bloat. Now, bloat is when a rabbit has had an imbalance in their food and not enough exercise. And so bloat is where, when you feel their tummy, it is hard. It's a hard tummy and it feels distended. And that's bloat. And the way to fix bloat is to eliminate seeds, give them only fibrous things like grass. The Sherwood pet food is a great hay substitute. It's a great grass substitute in the wintertime as well. And then force them to exercise. So recently I had a rabbit that had bloat, and she's just kind of naturally a sedentary rabbit. So I put her in a cage with her sister and her sister's doe, and they naturally said, hey, what are you doing in my cage? And so they chased each other. It's called, I'm going to call it an exercise regime, where the other does were helping one of the does to get exercise, you know, rather than me having to do it. But certainly, you know, for somebody that just had a single rabbit pet, when I just had one rabbit, I would take a Fiver out and I would chase her, and she loved to be chased. And then sometimes I would run away and she would chase me. So, so if you ever have like a bloat thing, that's what you do with it is that.
It's interesting, your food concept, because that's something that I've done with other pets that I have. I did not feed at a particular time of day. It was basically free, you know what I'm saying, free food. And you've trained the animal. I've done it with dogs and with horses both, that this is your food. There's no fight for it. You eat when you're hungry, and they learn that, and then they only eat when they're hungry, because animals in general are not obese if you train them properly, because they know that the food is there whenever they want it, and they only eat when they're hungry. They don't eat for any other reason. It's how animals operate. So the fact that you've trained them that way, to me, I think that sort of would mitigate that and get in front of it, because like I said, all of the rabbits, they know I only eat when I'm hungry. The food is here all day long. I don't have to fight for it. When I'm hungry, I get something to eat, eat a couple pellets. I'm going to go lay back down again. It's just how they are.
Yeah, it's interesting also that I'm further frustrated by this, you know, misinformation on the internet, because in books, I might add, many rabbit books say these things. And it's because, see, rabbits are actually grazers. They will normally just graze.
Yes.
And yes, they're more prone to graze in the morning and graze in the evening, but they graze pretty much all the time. So if you only were going to give them food in the morning and the evening, then if they were grazing, if they wanted to eat in the middle of the day and they were hungry and they couldn't just go get a couple pellets. Yep. And if you train them that, oh my gosh, the food has arrived, I've got to suck it all down. You know, I think it's the same thing as like, you know, human beings that have to fight for food. If they're like, I've got to just wolf it down. because the food isn't going to be there later. I better get it while the getting is good. And I've found this, I don't know why it's just such a hard concept. I don't know why there's so much information, misinformation out there. And so I'm glad we're combating that. I wanted to get onto the whole topic of bottles, because I feel like this is also one of those topics that is, there's a rabbit health aspect to it. And then there is the human impact aspect. So basically my perspective was that anything that causes more work for the human causes them to say, oh my gosh, rabbits are so much work. I don't want to have a rabbit. So I chose to address everything from those two concepts. What can I do to make it easy to have a rabbit? And what is also healthful for a rabbit? What I found was that the bottles that are on the market are either too small, the valves wear out, or the valves are not the right style, or they are designed for high pressure systems. So let's just run through those. So there are some Nivik bottles that you can get that have a small capacity. They're only like 12 milliliter, which is not very much. And they have like these brass valves. Now, rabbit teeth will destroy those brass valves over time. The other thing is that they push into a little rubber grommet and the rabbits get in there and, you know, they're going to explore their environment. So what do? They eat the rubber grommet and then it starts leaking. Okay. So that is a system really doesn't work. So we can't have any rubber grommets and the valves can't be made out of brass because
because
the rabbit teeth are just going to wear them out. So then you look at some of the valves that are actually of the correct design, meaning they're bite valves and they're the right shape and stuff, but they are only designed for high pressure systems. So they're designed such that you have to have a water source at least 4 feet above, or your water source has to be pressurized. Otherwise, the valve itself has a spring in it that holds it closed with so much pressure that there isn't enough back pressure to overcome that. So those
who systems, in the world is going to buy that? That's a regular person.
Nobody that's a regular okay. person buys that. Nobody does.
It's got to be like a professional rabbit breeder or something. Yes, I mean, no right. regular person is going to buy that system.
Yeah. I mean, it's exclusively designed to function for pressurized, piped, hard piped systems, basically.
Yeah.
So then there's the lick style valves. Like, I'm sure you've seen them for dogs where it's got like a little ball in it and then they're yep. supposed to lick. Okay, so you tell me, do you think rabbits are lickers or are they biters?
We're definitely in the bite category.
That's right. So if you put a lick style valve in front of a rabbit, it's not going to use it. It's not going to be effective. And
I'm going to be honest with you. I have never seen one that is not that. So now I'm really interested to see one of these bad boys up close, because every rabbit bottle that I've Googled on the internet has the ball that's the lick valve.
Yes.
What the what?
Yes. And so I've had so many people that have had rabbits over the years. They'll say to me, "Wow, Felicia, the bottles that you've invented here are just amazing." She's like, and I'll tell them this thing where I don't use the lick valves. And they're like, "Yeah, we tried the lick valves. Our rabbits didn't use it at all." I'm like, the rabbit's not going to use it. Rabbits don't lick. If you're their friend and you're rubbing on them, you know, like they think you're grooming them, then they'll turn and they'll lick you too, because they love you. You know, they want to give you some grooming back. But in terms of like going and getting some water, no, licking is not their thing. So I'm astonished by how many bad products there are on the market for rabbits in general. There are actually, you know, like we talk about the pre-manufactured cages. The vast, vast, vast majority of pre-manufactured cages for rabbits are hideously designed. They do not direct and capture pee. So there's this gap between, there's always these like gaps that they have. It's like, oh, here's this little tray on the bottom. And then here's this gap. And then what do you think the rabbit does? Well, it does this like 45 degree directional pee, which ends up on your floor. Okay. So my cage designs don't allow that to happen. Anyways, back to the whole bottle thing. What I found, and I searched for months to try to find a bottle that had a design that would work. You want your bottles to not grow bacteria on the inside. So that's one. Whatever components you use, it has to be designed for potable water, right? It needs to be durable. It needs to be of a bite valve style. It should have large capacity. I go with, 1,000 milliliters because I want to have a situation where, you can go away for 3 days and leave Maxim in his cage. He's going to have plenty of food and you want him to have 1,000 milliliters of water there and he's going to be just fine.
What do they drink on average per day? Do you know, how much do they normally drink?
Well, it depends on the breed, obviously. Your larger breeds are going to drink about 20 to 30 milliliters per day.
Okay.
Yeah. But a Polish rabbit will only drink probably 10 mils per day. Mm-hmm.
But if it's not the lick style and they don't want to lick, I'm just asking, I could see that there's a potential where they get dehydrated because they're irritated with the bottle. So then now you've snowballed into a whole other thing because they don't want to do it. And now they're dehydrated.
And they won't eat if they don't have a water source that they like. If they think there's bacteria in the water, they won't drink it. If the water tastes a little funny, they're not going to drink it. So, and this is their self-preservation, right? Their self-preservation is like, I'm not going to drink any sort of toxic.
They're out in the wild. I mean, they go up there and you don't know what the water source might be. If it smells a little funky, nope, we're going to keep going. Head to the next one because
that's
you don't know what's in it.
Right. So then when they don't eat, then their gut system goes into GI stasis. And you can really end up with a dead rabbit real quick.
I can see this happening because everything is so small. Mm-hmm. So, in a larger animal, like a horse, for example, they can get colic. And I mean, they can go from okay to colic. But the colic can take hours, for it to whatever. And it might be the next day. But I mean, I'm assuming the size of the rabbit's stomach and the urinary tract and everything else, it's so much smaller. That entire length of time that it would take for any other animal is going to be shortened dramatically. So you can go mm-hmm. from your not having water, all of a sudden I'm not eating. Now I'm not eating or drinking. And that's going to go south pretty stinking quickly.
Yeah. Pretty much like 8 hours is not a good thing. Right. Which is why I ended up writing a rabbit book, because I have read about 14 rabbit books, several of which were actual rabbit veterinary manuals. And I felt like there was such a pile of misinformation out there that I just wanted people to be successful with the rabbits that they get from the rabbitry here. And so I wrote this book and I address these things so that they know that this is what I'm looking for. I'm paying attention to the water intake and I'm paying attention to the feces output. And I'm checking these things. And I teach people how to do mandibular checks and maxillary checks and ear checks and toe checks and, all the various checks that need to happen. Even the inguinal canal gets checked. So I teach them how to do
that training.
I teach people how to do their rabbit healthcare checks and how to do, nail clippings properly and that. But a lot of it is if you set up the environment correctly and you give them the right toys to play with and they have the right food and they have the right water, they are tough and resilient and durable and they don't get sick. But this whole rapid onset thing can definitely happen, which is why one of those reasons I wrote that book is because I said you have to pay attention quickly to anything that's happened and potentially do something about it. Like you could have a rabbit that gets an eye injury, for example, and then they're going to get an infection in the eye. You can't wait to take your rabbit to a vet. You need to be providing the health care to your rabbit. You need to do it now. If it's 10 o'clock at night, you need to do it now. So I had a rabbit who got injured in a cage incident between siblings. And their rabbits make very thickly caseous, purulent exudate, which is, you know, pus basically. And it had glued this poor little rabbit's eyelid shut. Now, if I would have left her like that, she could have gotten keratoconjunctivitis and lost the eye. So what did I do? I got on it immediately. I gently cleaned the eye, and then I went and got colloidal silver drops, and I pulled back her little eyelid, and I put the drop in there, and I hold it open and just wait, rub it around, you know? And then I would do that every 4 hours. I would give her another drop, only one drop. That's all you need. I mean, how big is the rabbit eye?
No,
right?
It's a rabbit eye.
and I kept the pus out, and you know what? She fully recovered in 3 days. So, and this is very typical recovery time. Rabbits tend to recover very quickly, and they will recover very quickly when you get on it right away. So I have in my book, I put together all of these things that people need to be successful. I say, you know, you got to have some povidone on hand. You got to have your colloidal silver on hand. The Benny back, you know, there are certain things that you need to just have on hand. And then you need to keep your eyes peeled for these things and check these things. And then if there's an issue, you just deal with it right away. And if you need a backup call, then, you know, that's what I'm here for. I feel
I think this, but part of these things, I think in order to keep those things from happening, not saying that you don't need to keep watching your rabbit, is you need to purchase the correct type of living environment for them that has been carefully thought out, engineered solution. You need to, you know, purchase the correct type of water bottle, the correct type of food bin, you know, ditto for the poo box and the bottom of the crate, all of these things. I think if you out of the gate, again, get the engineered solution. I mean, I'm not saying everything is eliminated, but I mean, I'm more from the IT perspective. I want to do everything I can in advance to try to prevent as many problems as I can. I want to be proactive. So proactively means I need this kind of bottle. I need this kind of cage. I need this kind of poo box. We need this kind of rope. I need this kind of stuff on the bottom of the grid. All of those things. What can I do proactively to try to keep anything from happening? So that way I've done everything I can as an owner so that I have a good relationship with the rabbit and the rabbit is going to be happy. So get them in the right kind of environment out of the gate, because otherwise you've got the Barbie house. It's got the paint on it. People are eating wood, everything else. I mean, yes, it looks cute on Instagram, but your little bunny's got a tummy ache. And then what? Now they've got to call you on the phone and we've got to do a FaceTime and we got to see what's going on versus let me just get what they need from the jump.
Right. So you brought up food bins, and that is another excellent point. So there are a lot of hay racks that are on the market, and I think that they just basically suck. I think that hay is extremely messy in general, and it's very frustrating for most humans. And so I came up with a completely different alternate. So when I do a cage, it has 3 food bins in it. It has a nice size, you know, free feeder that you could put a carrot in. You could put some freshly harvested grass in there, dandelion, you know, anything like that. I do a little seed bin. And then I also do the pellet feeder. Now, the pellet feeders that I get are exceptionally special because they don't dump pellet dust on your floor. The vast majority of parts that are manufactured and then advertised on the internet for rabbits fit into one of two categories. They're either for the industrial rabbit industry, which don't work real well in your home where you would like to have a clean, easy to clean, easy to keep clean sort of space, or they're just crap that is mislabeled and manufactured and mislabeled to scam people in the consumer market. It's very difficult to navigate that line in between. And then it's not just the part, but it's actually the, how do you use this part most effectively? Like there's actual subtleties associated with how high do you mount the bite valve for the water bottle? How high do you mount the food bin? You know, those sorts of things are important, and I don't want more mess. And
again, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't want to think about it. I don't want to Google how high to put the stinking water bottle. I don't want to have to figure out how high the stupid food bin needs to be. I just want to get the cage and all that's been figured out for me.
Well, there really
is. Why? I mean, because these things have to be thought out. I mean, this is not something that I want to figure out. I want somebody else to do the research and okay, this is what works. And here, put the little happy bunny in there and we're going to go on up. Because honestly, at the end of the day, I don't want to mess with that. I just want to pet on the bunny. We want to sit and have meetings together. I want to sit and watch TV and we're going to talk about this TV show that's on. I'm going to be like, oh my gosh, what the what? Did you see that? What was she thinking? This is what I want to do with the bunny. I don't want to figure out placement of water bottle and food bin and everything else. I want to hang out with the bunny and have a good time. I need somebody else that has an engineering background like yourself to figure out all the rest of the stuff so we can just start having fun and watching TV together.
Good times. You know, one of the other things I found on the internet that I find to be just a pile of misinformation is, and this, you know, trickles down into the phone calls I get. Well, people are like, you know, do you have any does? I'd really like does. I've heard that bucks spray and, you know, bucks make this mess and we don't, you know, we don't want anything that sprays. And then people are like, wait, your bucks are intact? Don't you have them denutted? And I'm like, no. Bucks don't need to be denutted. So let's talk a little bit about why bucks don't need to be denutted and actually why bucks in a lot of contexts are the best choice as a pet, as a therapy rabbit.
So the denutting of the rabbit, I thought the same thing when you and I were first talking about rabbits. I was like, I need a doe. I don't want the boys. The boys have nuts. They pee everywhere. I don't want any part of that. Then I learned pretty quickly that there is literally, in your case, with the rabbits that you are breeding, absolutely no reason to remove the testicles. Zero. What's the point? There is nothing. There is no health concern. Sometimes I know certain breeds of animals, it's a health concern that you want to take. Okay. Not the case here. The rabbits that you have are ridiculously clean. That was something I also learned very early on. I watched videos of like tours of rabbit cages and there's, you know, boys with large sets of testicles that are not peeing on anything. The cages are immaculately clean. They just don't do it. So again, I think the denutting thing, I mean, like I said, I think that just, you know, whatever everybody else wants to do is fine. You've clearly figured it out. The does versus the bucks. Again, I was in the same category. I want the doe. Nope. The bucks make far better companions based on the ones that I've seen that you have. Their behavior is much more predictable. They are much more even keeled by far. They are pretty much same personality day in and day out. You've got the one that is, I call him the class clown, Arnaud. All he wants to do is make you laugh. That is his sole purpose in life. When he gets to be the office rabbit for the day, he comes up there. He knows, oh, I'm here to make her laugh today. You have another one. All he wants is a couple pets. Then he's going to chill and he's going to do his own thing. That's Maxim. He's like, yeah, give me a couple pets. I'm good to go. As long as I got my toys. Then you have your special boy on floor who is, that is your teenager. Whatever limit you've drawn, he's like, where's the line? Yep, one rabbit paw over the line. We're going to test this lady today. But again, all three of these rabbits, they're brothers. They all have the same personality every single day, day in and day out. You know exactly what to expect from every single one. The does, the video I saw the other day with one of the does that does not like you, the look on that girl's face, I just thought, holy smokes, she really does not. And I'm thinking, what? And you're because the boys are just like, oh, it's Felicia. We're so excited. Let me jump up and down in the cage and get some pets. She's going to like have a little treat for us or whatever. This doe, she could care less if you drop dead tomorrow. She'd be like, great. It's going to be me and Jerry from here on out. I don't need her anyway. That's her feeling in this entire thing. And the does are very, sometimes they are very easygoing. And then I've seen them just spaz out for absolutely no reason. And they flip out. The bucks, again, I was in the exact same boat. I was like, oh, I want a doe. I want a doe. No, I do not. I want a buck. So much more. And they're, again, I say this, but these are about your rabbits. They are people pleasers, in my opinion. Your bucks want to be around people and they want to do what the person wants them to do. They enjoy being around humans and having that companionship. And I think that is also a huge difference in therapy rabbits and other rabbits. Your rabbits are bred to crave that human attention. They love being petted. They go ballistic in the morning when you come downstairs. And clearly it's not about food because they are free eaters. It is not, you are not coming down there with a bucket of food and everybody's flipping out because it's breakfast time. They are just happy to see you. Again, which I think is a massive difference because they want to be around people. That is it. That's the difference between a born rabbit and a rabbit that has been bred as a therapy rabbit to be around humans and want that companionship and enjoy it.
So yeah, let me fill in this. You've done an excellent job filling in the story on Bucks. The only thing I would say in addition to Bucks is that they are much more giving of their affection.
Absolutely.
As well.
Much more loving.
And not just like, you know, up and pet me up, but also just licking you. You know, they're going to groom you as you're grooming them, and they want to bond with you. So they're just much more giving of their affection. So
I want to talk about the rabbits, about one of the first things that shocked the you-know-what out of me is that a lot of times you do not leave the lid on and they don't leave. I told someone that story and they were like, what? I'm like, yes, the lid is off. I mean, these jokers can like jump feet in the air. I said, they don't leave. And they were like, what do you mean? I'm like, they don't hop out. I said, they can hop out and take out and be gone. And I said, they are not. I said, they'll hop up on this little shelf. They want some pets from her. Case in point, Maxim back there. There is no lid on that cage that he has been in to be office rabbit today all day long. And I talked to you at 7 o'clock this morning. Here he is at 6:52 my time. He hasn't left. He has no desire to leave whatsoever. I could not understand that for the longest time. I'm like, why are they not leaving? Why do they want to leave? They want to be around the humans. They want to have that companionship. This is the best place ever for them. I have no desire to leave here at all. He hasn't tried to hop out all day. He's over there just messing around right now, chewing on some dang cardboard, eating the rope, having a good time. Not once has he thought, I'm hopping out of this crate. I'm leaving. I am down the road. What's past Racine? Because I'm out the door.
Well, you know, that's so when people contact me about rabbits, some of them have been a little bit offended in the beginning when, you know, I tell them that my process is not just you tell me what you want, but like, I want to interview you, you know, I want to find out about
you.
You don't get to pick. I'm going to pick the rabbit that I think is best for you because I know these rabbits intimately. I know their parents and their siblings, and I handle them twice a day, every day. And if any rabbit needs special training, they get special training. I know their tendencies, what they like, you know, are they mellow? Like, you know, Maxim is the perfect fit for you because he is even, he is mellow. You know, if you want him to be affectionate to you, you just need to show up by the cage and show him that you're there and he'll start dishing out the loving. But if you need him to be quiet and while you're in meetings and just like you're busy doing something else, this is what he does. He's just Mr. Cool Cucumber.
Yep.
And that's what he's going to do when, you know, you're watching TV or if you put him in the travel cage and you take him someplace, he's going to be Mr. Cool Cucumber while you're driving around. I literally take the rabbits in travel cages and I drive them around. I mean, I don't just like do mileage for no reason, but I rotate them. I keep like a rabbit rotation schedule and I don't just take the same rabbit out all the time. I look at, okay, who hasn't been driven around lately? And then they go in the travel cage and then they go visit, they go meet other people. There's this whole rabbit training thing is exceptionally complex. And so that's why it's really, really important that I get to know the people who want a rabbit. And yes, I'm certainly sensitive to what they have to say about, like, for example, if it's a family and they say, you know, we've got two daughters and each one of our daughters would like to have a rabbit. What would, you know, so the one that I heard most recently was, my daughters did this research and based upon the internet, they determined that they wanted sisters. And I said, you know, probably in this context, that's correct. And I think too much of the time I hear where people are looking for really young rabbits. They think that that is appropriate. And I'll tell you that I leave the Bucks with their mama up until the point that they can't be with mama and their sisters anymore. Meaning, you know, they start to try to mate them basically. Mm-hmm. And then the Bucks have to go by themselves. So that gives the Bucks an excellent time to learn from mama and to be socialized with their sisters. And they learn poo box train, they learn bottle, they learn proper feeding, because they then have this opportunity to get to, oh, what's mama doing? Oh, mama eats from this little bowl. Well, that's food. So they visually identify, they smell the food, they see the behavior. They see mama jump up on the shelf and do paws up. And then they see that mama gets pets. So then like, whoa, I want to do that. Let me get up there and do pets. It's really critical that they're trained properly. And then I still let them mature for several months before I would ever place them with anyone. You're very juvenile Bucks. They need to go through a maturation process where their personality really flushes out. They are going to, through that period of stage of their life, have hormonal fluctuations are going to happen as their testes descend and their testosterone levels increase. Now, one of the other interesting things is that over probably the first year to two of the buck's life, their forehead will get wider because their skull is getting thicker. Bucks are very, very, very strong and durable, and they will, their head will get a little bit wider. So they'll get, they might add maybe an ounce or two of weight, which is very minor. But you will see a little bit of, spreading of the forehead. So, I want to talk about does though, because I led into this whole thing of, you know, the sisters. So, first off, I think older does make exceptionally good pets, as an exceptionally good therapy rabbits. They have had an opportunity to have babies. Maybe they've had 1, 2, 3 litters. So their body hasn't been tortured. I don't torture the bodies of any of my does. My most productive does only have 3 litters. That's it. Okay. And I want them to have a long, healthy, happy life. I don't want them to get fat so they don't get huge dewlaps. The really interesting thing is as the does get, so when you get a new doe and, you know, she's going through her puberty stage and kind of adolescence and stuff, she's got a lot of meat on her, a lot of substance, because that's going to be put into that first batch of babies. And then she has her babies. And, you know, then she's putting all of that into milk. And it takes a doe quite a long time in order to reflesh and to put that, you know, flesh back on her. She's going to milk those kits for probably 2.5 months. I mean, long time. Okay. Most rabbit breeders will take the kits away from the doe. And because they want the doe to reflesh sooner. And I just completely reject that. No, mama has a psychological need to be with her kits, and the kits need to learn from mama, and they need to be there as long as possible. When you understand other livestock, like chickens, for example, the older hens maintain a hierarchy. They teach the younger hens. Well, this also happens with rabbit does. So I have many does who have been with their mama for 6 months or a year, and they're still there. They're living in harmony. They are in coexistence with mama. And sometimes I'll take, if it's like a litter of 5, I might take a couple sisters out and they'll stay together. And then it'll be mama and 2 more sisters, right? Because the bucks were removed. So does really want companionship. Having a companion for your rabbit is in many cases very beneficial. And with a buck, you need to be that companion. With does, they should, you need to be getting 2 rabbits together who were raised together. I have actually successfully placed, like my sister got one of my rabbits initially who was a doe, and she says to me one day, you know, I think Calico is lonely. I think, and my sister's there every day and she's an excellent animal caregiver. So I knew that wasn't it. So she says, well, you know, do you think you could find me another doe that would actually integrate with Calico? And I told her, you know, let me work on it. So I did some thinking and observing a lot of animal behavior, and I selected a doe, and my sister named her Zuzu. And Zuzu was a little bit smaller than Calico, and she was a more introverted personality. And so I told my sister how to integrate them. Now, I know these things because of chickens. When you integrate them, you need to not place them together immediately, but let them see each other, like live in close mm-hmm. proximity with like a barrier in between. And you do that for a couple weeks and then they're like, oh, okay, here's this, you know, other rabbit they're around, and then put them together and then just monitor it. And you know what? Zuzu and Calico been living together in harmony for 2 years and they're best pals. And what's even funny is that sometimes Calico will like protect Zuzu from somebody, you know, from the humans. She'll be like, she'll step out in front and like, no, Zuzu's my friend. You can't have Zuzu.
One of the things too that I thought was that goes back to the socialization is I did not realize until I saw some of the pictures that literally from the moment these rabbits are born, that they have human hands on them. They become very accustomed to your voice, to, you know, Jerry's voice, to the noises of the house, and having human hands on them. Like I said, from the time they come out, there was a video where you were fluffing some fur and some paper and tucking some in or whatever. And they were, I mean, they're so little bitty when they're small. It's very difficult to comprehend how small a baby rabbit is, but they're super, super small. And you were kind of tucking them in so they could be warm or whatever. And I thought this is really the beginning part of the socialization, because two things I noticed is A, they were so small and they were already accustomed to human touch. And B, the one thing that was the real kicker for me is the mother did not flip out. Because a lot of times when babies are small like that in the animal world, and you, I mean, a cat, a dog, whatever, the mother is going to light you up. I mean, your hand, you're going to be missing a finger. They do not want you touching their babies. They just came out, whatever. And that was something, I mean, the mom was just like, yeah, it's Felicia. She's chill. Everything's fine. And I saw that, like I said, with several different, and I thought this is really, really something, because the mother does not see you as any sort of a threat and you're over there tucking them in. But like I said, normally the mothers, like I said, because these bad boys were just, they were fresh, they were new. And the mother would just like, she did not even care that you were, you know, tucking them in with the little fur and the paper.
Yep. So back to the voice aspect of your point, you know, I don't use the radio. I know people that just play the radio for their rabbits, and I don't do that. I disagree with that approach, because their rabbits are, I think they're very intellectual and very sophisticated in many ways. I have had rabbits that I have seen actually like agitating with the beat of the music a little bit. So like they get into it. They actually get into it. And I want music that is going to be calming and smoothing to their temperament. So I use exclusively classical music that is presented to them on an IP speaker that has only my recordings on it. So I've selected the playlists and all of that. There's no human voices. There's no human singing. There's no, you know, rock band, but it's all classical music. And I've been doing that for years. And the other nice thing that I really like about using an IP speaker with a schedule, so I have morning music and then I have afternoon music. And on Sunday, they get an extended playlist. It helps them have a schedule that helps with their circadian rhythms. Because rabbits are crepuscular. Crepuscular means they're active during the morning, they're active during the night, and you know they're moderately active during the daytime, but mostly they like to nap out at around noon. And so it helps for them to have a schedule. So we have a morning schedule and an evening schedule, but I don't want the rabbits to be hearing other people's voices, because when I give them a command, I want that command to be meaningful. Like, this morning, I was holding and cuddling Maxim, and he chewed on my shirt a little bit, and I turned and I said, stop that. And he immediately stopped it. So if they're hearing a kind of uncensored, unfiltered stuff on the radio, they're never going to learn the commands that you want them to learn. So I use specific commands to get them to stop chewing on something or to just stop doing something naughty if they're ever doing something naughty.
But I don't want people to think that they have to have this, you know, super mellow classical music all the time, because another thing that I realized very quickly is your house is full of noises. Somebody's always working on something in the garage, in the basement, whatever. I mean, one time there was like a shop vac or a drill or a whatever. And all of these, and I say people, all of the people rabbits, they are extremely accustomed to regular people noises, noises that happen in a household. And nobody was like flipping out when Jerry was using a saw or a drill or something like that. They were all just like, yep, that's just Jerry working over there. I mean, nobody, because a lot of times you will see rabbits, I mean, they spaz out when they hear some sort of noise or they flip around or whatever.
Right.
And they all seem to be, like I said, just regular. Again, to me, I think this is just the interaction and the socialization. They are accustomed to living in a human's environment and the noises that happen, you know, dishes clanging around, somebody moving in a vacuum and this, that, and the other, and they just don't care. It's like, it's regular everyday life for them.
Yeah. It's important that they are stress inoculated to noises and they are not baby caked. So what I mean by that is, I have a shop vac. And it has a HEPA filter on it. And then it also has like a diffuser. So I don't want to ever like blow a bunch of stuff right in the rabbit's face. So I avoid that. But in terms of the noise level, they're completely used to that. They don't care. They're not freaking out. I'm not saying that they don't go into their little tunnel, but they're not having a spaz out session. And I have buckets that are galvanized steel. So, you know, you put down a galvanized steel pail, punk, you know, it makes a pretty substantial noise. And they hear this all the time. My mother has one of my rabbits and she has a cane and she drops her cane rather frequently. And I noticed that Whiskers, her rabbit, when she drops her cane, Whiskers does nothing. I said to her like, wow, Whiskers is so totally used to that. She's like, oh yeah, he doesn't care. He does nothing. But that stress inoculation is very important. And I specifically raise the rabbits so that they are okay being up in the sky. They're okay being upside down. They're okay being held in all kinds of different positions, because the time when your rabbit is going to get injured is when they shoot off, you know, and you don't catch them. And not everybody has quite as, you know, hot rabbit catching hands as I got. I'm like pretty good. I'm like one of those really, really good receivers, you know, catching the long balls. But that's really important that they're not phased so that they don't go shoot off, because when they shoot off, they're going to run their face into something and break a tooth.
Yep.
And then you've got yourself vet visits. I happen to know how to do rabbit dental surgery and I have the tools and equipment, so I don't have to take rabbits to the vet if that happens, but most everybody else would have to. So you were talking about baby rabbits and then the relationship with mama. So baby rabbits are about 3 inches long. Baby Polish rabbits are about 3 inches long when they pop out.
They're itty bitty. My gosh, they're so teeny tiny.
And then there are some that are, if they're only about 2 inches long, they're probably not going to survive. And those are typically called peanuts. And I have tried on many occasions to save a peanut and I've never been successful at it. And a lot of other rabbit breeders will say, yeah, the peanuts are just not going to make it. So that's something that I just deal with. But one of the other things that I do with the mamas, not only do I build this really good relationship with the mamas, but I'm very sensitive to when are they going to have their babies? Because once in a while, they'll have a baby out of the nest box, and it might even be on accident. So like Orthos had babies many months ago, and She had one dead kit and she had two in the nest box. And then a third one was out like underneath the stairs. Now, if I wasn't monitoring her time and if I didn't check on her, then that kit that was underneath the stairs, it would have frozen, you know, and it would have died because it would have been too cold. And so I was all over that and I'm like, good job, Orthos. And then I took the one that was out and I checked on its little siblings. And then I tucked it in there right with the siblings and then tucked it in under the fur. And you know what? All three of those kits are super strong and they are the most friendly rabbits I've ever seen. they're super mega friendly, sweetie bun buns. But that relationship with mama is absolutely important because you have to be able to get into that nest box every day, check on babies, make sure there's no dead kits, make sure that the nest box is clean every day. I inspect that nest box. Are there any wet spots? If there's a wet spot, I got to take it out. So usually what mama will do is as she's milking kits, she will actually lick the back end of the kits and literally eat their pee so that it doesn't get into the nest box.
Okay.
And, but you know, if you've got eight kits or if you've got six kits, you know, you can't really get to all of them in one feeding. It's just not going to happen. Right. So some pee-pee is going to end up in the nest box and somebody's got to come along and get that out of there. Because if you don't get it out of there, then it can mold and mildew and it'll just be very bad, you know, mm-hmm. air quality and unhealthy environment for kits. So yeah, it's very important to have a strong working trust-based relationship with mama rabbit.
I said, and it's just the handling from day one, to me, that is what makes these rabbits want to be around people because they've had human hands on them. I mean, because when they first come out, they're bald. There is not one drop of like pretty little rabbit fur on them. They're ugly as all get out. They're super small. They're bald. They're ugly. They're shrivelly looking. They're super tiny. And you have to, you know, they've got to be protected. Like the one that got underneath the steps. I mean, you know, you had to go get that one. And again, I was very, very surprised. Like I said, because I had watched the time-lapse videos and everything. I knew these bad boys had just been born and you were in there. Oh, look at the little babies and moving the stuff around. And the mom was just like, eh, whatever, it's Felicia. I was really, really surprised that she was not much more protective over the babies and we just knew that you were again, it's the socialization that she knew that you were there just to help and check on them.
So rabbit babies actually have tiny claws. They do. And that helps them dig through the nest because if let's say you've got five kits and three of them decide to go to the front of the nest box. Well, then the other two are like, hey, it's not warm enough. Where's my friends? So then they'll dig through. They may dig down in the nest box. They may tunnel around. They're diggers. Yeah, there's actually some complications if you have only one kit. Then there have been some circumstances where I have provided some supplementary heat. And I mean, it really depends on the time of year. If it's the summertime, it's not an issue. But if it's the wintertime and, you know, ambient temperature is, you know, 45, 50, where the rabbits are living, that is too cold for a brand new kit all by themselves. So I provide some supplement heat around there. But that in itself is a bit of a complicated thing, because if you put too much heat in a particular space, the rabbit will go there and then they'll actually cook themselves.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, raising rabbits is complicated. Yeah. And training therapy rabbits is even more complicated.
I agree. But you've got some great rabbits. I mean, they are all some of them I watch the videos and they just make me laugh. That is maybe the single-handedly the reason that I decided to do this, because I thought, why would I just not want to? I mean, I look over there and they're funny. You know what I'm saying? They have such personalities, and why not de-stress from these umpteen meetings that I have during the day with all of these different people? And I mean, so many of us are working remotely now. You know, you're at home, and even if you have children and a husband, I mean, you know, people go to school, they go to work, you're there by yourself. And I mean, for the most part, there's not many people to talk to when you're not in the meetings. And I can't say to the person I'm in the meeting with that I'm irritated, but I can wait till I hang up. And then I can look over at that rabbit and be like, Maxim, did you see that? What was that guy thinking in that meeting? You know, you have somebody to have this conversation with. And then, you know, you've got, you know, Mr. Arnaud T-Box King. I cannot wait to see who gets him. Honestly, he is so freaking funny. He makes me laugh every time I see him. So I am excited to see who you pick for him because he is so hilarious.
He is Mr. Sweetie Buck Buck too. I mean, he's just so gentle. I remember.
And he's pretty. He's got that unusual color thing going on. He's got that sort of chocolate toffee kind of thing. I mean, and he knows he's cute because he knows he's differently. You know what I'm saying? He knows he's a looker. You've got that one picture of him sitting on the cement and he's kind of got that, you know, backwards, like, you know, hey, this is my social media picture. He knows he looks different from everybody else. He's kind of got that showstopper style going on.
That was his GQ photo is what that was.
Yes, it was. Yeah. He was sitting on that thing. He was like, oh, yeah, that's me. But he knows, like I said, he's hilarious. He knows it. I mean, he's so stinking funny. So I'm going to be curious to see who you pick for him. Cause he's a funny little joker.
So it's interesting, you know, you mentioned the gentle nature of some of these rabbits that I have this mental inventory that I keep, but I also keep notes over time on all the rabbits, and I get to see how their personality and tendency evolves over time. And I remember distinctly from the very beginning, Maxim was just so Mr. Gentle Paws. You know, he would just Mr. just Gentle Paws. Not trying to like grip, you know, if you just hold him, he just so Gentle Paws. And I've got another young buck who is Mr. Gentle Paws. And he's, you know, like, hey, Felicia, pet me now. he's just so patient and gentle. And Arnaud is like that. He's Mr. Gentle Paws as well. I want to go back to the older does because I think that this is an underappreciated topic. People seem to be really, really interested in getting young rabbits. And I feel like, yes, you could get some younger does that are sisters and, you know, they're never going to have babies because, you know, you want them to be your therapy rabbits. But there is a lot of value in does that have had a couple litters and, you know, they're like a year and a half or 2 years old. They've kind of gotten the whole kit thing out of their system. They aren't like freaking out. I got to build a nest box. Yep. Cause that is a drive for them and they're not freaking out over like, I got to go find a buck to mate with, you know, they're just more chill and they coexist really, really well. So like I have Ingaria and her daughter Cinnamon and they live together and they are just happy, happy campers. They're like all loving on each other all the time. And you've seen the pictures of Zanzibar, Fawn and Isabella. So Zanzibar mm-hmm. is the mama.
Yep.
And even in the hotness of the summertime, I saw those does crammed next to each other like yep. a sandwich.
The three little fat butt picture. Three little bunny butts all lined up beside each other. I remember that picture.
They just love snuggling so much that, and you know, if I put my hand down in there, they're like cooking each other out, you know, they're just like, it's the middle of summer and they're like crammed on each other, you know, so they're not doing it because they're like, oh, I want to be warm. No, they're just doing it.
They just enjoy each other's company.
Yeah. So I think that the older does are a really underappreciated therapy companion. And I find that after they've really gotten past this whole phase where, oh, I really want to have babies and, you know, I really want to make my nest box.
They're mellow.
Yeah. Yeah. They are just mellow. And I mean, Ingaria is so chill. She's like, you know, holding a marshmallow.
And two, I mean, the therapy rabbit, I mean, I don't know why a therapy rabbit, why you would want to get one that's really young, because it hasn't been properly trained yet. I mean, if you're not looking for a therapy rabbit, if you just want a rabbit that you're just going to like leave out in the barn or whatever, okay, so be it. But a therapy rabbit is different. That therapy rabbit has got to be socialized. It's got to be trained. I mean, it has to have interaction with people. I mean, and then you have to figure out the personality, and that personality didn't show up like day one. I mean, that's something that evolves over time. And you're talking about, you know, the hormones have kind of do their thing and they've got to run their course. And then you have to figure out what the personality is. And I think this is the difference in a therapy rabbit and any other kind of rabbit is you're picking the rabbit. You know what the personality is of the rabbit, and then you try to match that personality with the person. So whether it's an older doe who's now chill and mellow, and maybe somebody wants two rabbits and you've got two great ones ready to go, those does are chill, they're mellow, they're ready to just go hang out and do whatever. But again, I don't think that you can get that same perspective on the personality of the rabbit when they're super small like that. I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't want that because they're not poo box trained, ready to go yet. They're not like all settled down and all of the whatever is situated. They haven't been exposed to all the people and the noises and everything else. And they're not trained to be the free eater. I mean, we're not there yet. So from a therapist's perspective, I have no idea why you would want to get one that's small. I don't know how anybody could market that because the rabbit hasn't been trained yet and you don't know the personality of the rabbit. And I think that's key for the therapy rabbit thing. And that was something I also didn't understand is you don't pick. I do not get to pick the rabbit that I want because I thought, oh man, look at that one. He's really pretty color. Okay, but that's not a good fit for me. You know, you have to know the personality of the person and the personality of the rabbit, and that the personality of the rabbit is not showing up for a hot minute. That's something that develops later on, you know, as they grow and mature. And I don't think you can get that match made, which I think is important for the relationship. You can't do it early on. The rabbits have to mature and then you can figure out who's going to be a good match together.
Yep. Absolutely. Excellently said. Do you think we have left any stone unturned here on the intro podcast?
Not for the intro, rabbits? But I mean, we could talk for hours about these rabbits. Because the next time I told you I want to do a Zoom, I want show and tell, I want demo rabbits, I want all kinds of cool stuff. Because I think the pictures say 1,000 words. And I think, you know, having the demo rabbits, because if people could see right now, dude sitting behind you in the travel cage has been in your office all day and he is back to taking, oh, wait, has she got something for me? Oh, no. All right, fine. Then I'm going back to sleep. He's just, you know, and all of them are like that. Now, Arnaud, he may be a little different because if he knew he was on camera, he may really just be like, okay, hold up. I'm going to have to do the extra T-Box show today because I'm on the podcast with Zoom. So yeah, that's what I want to do for the next one.
Well, excellent. And I thank you for your time promoting.
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely.
The value of therapy rabbits because, you know, I certainly don't do this for money.
Totally not.
I do it because I love the rabbits. And I think like everything else in my life, I mean, this is true for the IT business that I do. I've always been interested in getting to the nugget of truth and utilizing these hard-fought, you know, research and development revelations to educate other people, to dispel this misinformation and dispel the myths. I mean, oh, I do have one final thing to add. Polish rabbits, my Polish rabbits, have been extremely successful for people that have dog and cat allergies. Yeah.
Because they're ridiculously clean.
Well, I think that they just don't have the dander. They do, you know, they make fur and they definitely shed. The cage designs are designed such that their fur will not go flying out around your house. They're reasonably contained that way. And that the fur drops down into the trays. And I'm not saying that it's going to capture 100%. But I find even with all of my rabbits, which are in excess of 40, I only have to vacuum once a week. So,
okay,
you know, I mean, that's pretty good. And I do, one other fun tip here is when I want to clean out the tray and there's a bunch of fur in there because they've been shedding, I just take a little water spray bottle and I spray the fur down first. And then as I scoop it up, there's no flying fur.
It's not fluffing around and flying everywhere. That's a good tip. That's a helpful tip.
Yep. There's no flying fur. So yeah, I'm not going to make some sort of claim that they're hypoallergenic or anything like that. I mean, if somebody was on, like, for example, immune suppression drugs, I would recommend that they have no pet at all.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I have dog and cat allergies, and many of my rabbit customers have had dog and cat allergies. And even one of them had historically real issues with other types of rabbits, but not with these rabbits. So they're not as short hair as like a mini Rex would be. Or a Rex in general. Rexes have really, really, really short hair. But the challenge with Rexes is that they don't have the thick furring on the pad of the feet, which is very important because you see that rabbits don't have pads like cats and dogs. So
yeah,
this
just
is
fur down there.
That's their shoe. Now, as they get to be older, they develop a little callus right here on the heel of their hock, and then the fur from the center grows over that, and you want a rabbit who is going to grow nice fur because that is their shoe. That's how they are protected. So that's actually one of the attributes that I select for in breeding is, does this rabbit continually grow good quality, thick, robust fur over that the bottom of their foot, and when veterinarians do surgery on the foot, they do not cut through the ventral surface, which is the bottom of the foot. They tend to go in on the medial aspect on the side, even okay. if they need to like peel it back and then do, you know, some sort of suturing, you know, maybe a tendon got ripped or something like that. So, you know, veterinarians also know that you do not want to damage the bottom of that foot at all. So that's, to me, that's another reason why it's imperative that the cage is clean and it is a clean habitat for them. Because if they're walking around and poop and pee, then that fur is going to get matted down. And, you know, it can get like, imagine impacted.
And I've seen other rabbits like that on the internet. You look at pictures. I mean, their feet are like a yellowish brown color because they're mm-hmm. walking around in their own urine and feces all the time. This mm-hmm. Joker that you just held up to the video, his feet are white like china. I mean, now he is constantly back there making himself look good for the video, but still, I mean, he's, his feet are extra white. And like I said, all of the rabbits, I mean, even the ones that you have that are, there's, who is it that's got black with gray feet? But even the gray feet are still super clean. You don't mm-hmm. see any discoloration on the feet if they're gray, and the black ones as well. I mean, it's all like, you know, it's the correct color it's supposed to be. And two, I like the crate because again, it's easy to clean it out. You just pull the tray out, you know, and clean it out. It's much easier to do it versus having to take the rabbit out, do this, do that. You can just slide and go.
Yep. Yep. Okay. Well, again, I thank you for, you know, contributing your time on this volunteer time basis to further the benefits of therapy rabbits for humanity so that they can, and I think this is absolutely imperative nowadays. I mean, we have all these people doing work from home and having anxiety and stress and just not having
it's awful.
Yeah. They just don't have the outlets that they used to have. There was a gal that I had met who was really struggling with a lot of things in her life. And she actually ended up attending a birthday party as a guest where I had brought my rabbits. Cause hey, you know, what is a birthday party for adults, I might add, without rabbits. So I brought rabbits to this birthday party and she happened to be a guest and she just started to, you know, bond with one of these rabbits. I mean, he was all loving in her hair and just, he was all calm on her and stuff. And I, she's like, is it okay if I hold him? I'm like, yeah, you take him, you hold on him, you do, you know, and I could tell he was loving on her and he just bonded with her right away. And boy, like a half an hour later, she was just smooth. And she contacted me back later and said, you know, I realized that I was calm and centered and happy when I had this rabbit. And I'm like, well, you know, he's for sale. Would you like to buy him? So she ended up getting this rabbit with one of my cages, and her her performance at work improved, her test scores in school improved, and she was just, she had her friend with her all the time. You know, she just had her friend. And so she was no longer needing to focus her attentions on all the stress in her life. She could turn and focus her attentions on her rabbit friend and, you know, get a cuddle between meetings, right?
Yep, exactly.
So that is something that I didn't really, you know, anticipate being a thing. I mean, I know for me, the rabbits help me with stress, but, you know, I don't have anxiety, but I have heard from a number of people now who've ended up buying rabbits from me that it has actually helped them. I mean, there were some families who got rabbits who have told me that their children, their test scores, and I'm talking like teenagers here, their test scores got better. They had just less anxiety. They were less stressed out. They were just happier kids in general, you know? And so I mean, what could be a more cost-effective and wholesome option for therapy, you know, than a rabbit? Yeah. Okay. Well, as you said, we could talk for 100 years on this, and
I know it.
We'll have to do rendition number 2, but this was awesome. Thank you so much for your time.
Yes, ma'am.